the deal with the Shaunaki is I have about 8,000 unique hits a month. And I have some fans that are particularly rabid. And let's say I have about 4,000 people. Maybe two. It's in the thousands. It's difficult to know. So I've thought about doing things like Feedburner to figure it out.
Sure.
And then what happened in the past was, and I know you're really talking on your blog now about the importance of planning, is I started developing this content on this timeline, and I didn't have a plan. So I kind of got run over by it. And then other things came along, and I didn't have a plan of how it was going to work. So I kind of got dragged away from it for a while.
A while being?
Well, I just sort of did Shaunaki episodes less and less frequently. And out of the Shaunaki came How to Succeed in Evil, which is a project that, because I didn't have a really good plan for it, dragged me around for a while. It was going to be a comic book, and then somebody expressed interest in a television show. So I messed around with that for a while, and then I finally said, well, the only way that this is going to get done is if I focus on it and I do what I can do and what I can control, which is make it a novel. So I'm about, I don't know, about 80,000 words on that. I wrote it through once, and because I didn't have a plan, I didn't have a really good outline. I got a lot of great stuff. Half of it is actually for another book. So I went back and I spent about 2 months, let's call it a month and a half, just sitting down every day and going, okay, what's the story here?
Yeah.
Because I was so focused on, you know, like that everybody focuses on the number of words you crank out in a day, and I can crank out a lot of words in a day.
Sure.
But,
well, and for those of you,
if they're the wrong words.
Oh, yeah. And for those of you who don't know, Patrick is a writer extraordinaire, copywriter, creative, you know, really unique thinker. This is the thing that, you know, I like about Patrick. He comes up with you know, great ideas, and I've come to you a number of times in the past when I was stuck.
Yeah.
And you know, that's your great strength and your Achilles heel. Like many of us, you know, you do have great ideas, and you get off on these tangents, or you chase one thing, you know, and leave the other thing behind, just like you're talking about.
Yeah, it's interesting because most people, if you look at, say, building a company. You build a company where you find a specific person to fit into a specific slot, and they're not required necessarily to plan all of their work or an overall project or a larger thing. So they never really learn how to do that. If you're a technical person, like if I'm working in an agency context and I'm creative, somebody else is worrying about the schedule, somebody else is worrying about the production. So I'm not... My instinct is just to go and come up with a better idea or a new idea.
Well, and then the other problem is when you're an entrepreneur, you have all these other things you have to do.
Yeah.
You have to keep track of coming up with a new business, billing, tracking down people's payments, taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Personal life on top of that. It's a lot to deal with. And that's where most people just kind of fall down because they either get a couple clients and they just stop and they just go heads down and just work on those. Or in your case, you know, you get a couple projects and you're, that's it, you know, I'm done. And then you work and work and work for months, and then you lift your head up and you look around and go, oh, wait, what am I doing next? Or, where am I? You know, how did I get here?
Exactly. This is not my beautiful job.
That's
this
right.
This is not my beautiful house.
Yeah. It's the David Byrne syndrome.
So, I guess where do we start? I guess it's also probably worth mentioning that Brandon, until very very recently, was part owner of a pretty successful web and branding company that was moving in a direction that he didn't like. So he decided that he was going to go in a slightly different direction and move on his own and find ways that, I guess web business freedom says it all. That a lot of the things that people, oops, jump in here if I'm messing it up.
Sure.
But a lot of the things that people charge for from web firms are not the things that, and they're good things, it's wonderful to have a nice site, but they're not necessarily the things that make the whole connection between people across the web go.
Yeah, the technology's changed so much since I started doing this stuff 10 years ago. And what then was a real sort of black art people didn't know how to do it, so the price, you could command whatever price, you know, to do it for them. And over time, people got smart, and the technology got better. And today, most of the stuff's free, or a lot of it is. If you look hard enough, things like WordPress, for example, just an incredible blogging platform, plus, you know, whatever. And all these other social media tools allow you to just, you know, create content and share it with thousands of people at the push of a button for nothing are just remarkable. And for 10 years, I've built websites for other people, many of which were at a higher corporate level. So they expected to pay more, and they had a lot of red tape and process tied to it. But for the average small business, they don't need the red tape. They don't have the red tape necessarily. They just want to start going, and they don't have a lot of money. And so the dilemma becomes, do I try to do it myself, or do I hire somebody to do it? You know, the reality is most people could probably do it themselves if they had the instruction. But then you get back to the problem. Is that where your time is best spent? Do I need to be learning how to put together a website or you know, learning HTML or whatever? Or do I need to just focus on my content, presenting my professional skills or my product, whatever I'm selling?
Yeah, the problem is content, and especially companies have lots of content. People have lots of content. Your story is interesting to a bunch of people. My story is interesting to a bunch of people. If you can come out and you can identify and communicate your story, there are people out there in the world, even if it's only deep in the long tail, who are really going to get a lot out of it. Problem is that people either don't understand their story, they haven't, or they're reluctant to communicate it. And businesses, it's sort of an instinct to try and keep everything inside. But you can't keep it inside. There's no inside anymore.
No. Well, you know, you hit a good word on the head, the story. Because a lot of people think of content and they think, gosh, you know, I need to be a professional copywriter. You know, I'm not creative. That's not what I do. But everybody has a story. And some of the people that don't think they have a story, once you pull it out of them, their story is pretty fascinating. You know, and I've met a lot of people. I was just talking to a guy yesterday who found the Web Business Freedom site and contacted me. And it turns out, you know, he's a former DJ, really polished guy, has done a lot of various advertising and marketing type jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, works out of his house now, supports two kids, and, you know, he's struggling with what to do next and how to monetize and market himself. And I'm thinking, gosh, you're on the radio. You have, you know, thousands of people listening to you. They know your name in the market where you are. You have a face and a presence. You MC events. And then, you know, I asked him, for example, have you ever done a podcast? No. I'm like, you got a studio, a professional studio you could go to, you know, before you start your day job or your side job or whatever. You could sit there and use that equipment probably for free. And, you know, it just hasn't dawned on him to do stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting in that segues pretty nicely into some of the things I'd like to talk about today, because as I looked at the Shanaki, I'm thank you for your compliments about being a good writer. I was actually listening to the radio last night, and there was a snippet of an interview with B.B. King, and the guy introduced him as the worldwide king of the blues. And so they do their little interview bit, and again, B.B. King, who's just, he's just cool, came back. And he goes, hey, you've known me for a long time. Have you ever heard me refer to myself as the king of the blues? And the guy said, no, but everybody else does. And it's real quiet. B.B. King just says, well, people talk. I thought it was great. But, you know, it's very nice of you to say that I'm a good writer. I'm trying to focus more on the areas where I can improve to tell better stories and longer stories, like writing a novel. No idea what I was doing. I'm a great copywriter. I can put a nice sentence together. I can push a noun against the verb. It's that realization sometimes that you don't really understand what you're doing as much as you think you do.
Sure.
So the question is, why, in my mind now, is why do people like the Shanaki? And the things that I like about it are not the things that the people listening like about it. And that's a little bit of a disconnect. And once you start to get to a larger group of people, But one of the things I think is that it doesn't have to go through somebody else's filter.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, my filter is pretty rigorous, but the DJ, he can do a podcast. But if he podcasts about certain things, is he going to run into trouble with his day job?
Well, sure, especially if he's using their equipment. So maybe in his case, might not be the best idea.
But no, there's a way for him to do a podcast, but does it go through that?
Yeah, even though he's an independent consultant.
Yeah.
And does his work for them on the side, you know, part-time. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's what holds a lot of people back anyway. It's just the fear of offending somebody or having to get their approval.
Yeah.
But tell me about, well, what, I guess start back a little bit with regard to the Shaunakee. What was the intention of the Shaunakee as far as content? What were you trying to accomplish with that?
I was just very, very frustrated and very, very blocked as a creative person. I was in a bad place. And I needed to do something and get it out. And I could write a story, but I have a lot of friends who don't really read all that much or don't have that much time to read. They're not readerly sorts. But they like the stories I tell. I thought if I could record it and then they could come and listen to it, that might be interesting. And a podcasting was just starting, so it was coincidental or fortuitous or some other large adjective.
Yeah, lucky.
You know, I knew how to write radio, and I kind of knew how to produce it a little bit. So I said, "I'm going to try and do this." And I had no expectation that it would get any kind of following. I set the bar out there that I was going to do one a week for an entire year.
And you set that goal and made it.
Oh yeah, I made it. But I did it in the dumbest way possible because it was just like, "Oh, it's another week. What am I going to do?" So as I'm going to relaunch the Shaunakee on October 15th, and I want to have 5 episodes in the can. And I want to keep putting them in the can as I'm putting them out so the quality stays high.
Sure. Hey, good luck, because I was planning to have like 10 blog posts before I started Web Business Freedom, and I had 4. So now I'm playing catch up with myself, trying to.
Well,
but it's hard.
Part of it should be easier for me because I'm a writer. You know, I'm a pro.
You've done it.
Knuckling down, and I've done it before. But the part that I was messing myself up with was if you can move it out a little bit, then you can gang up the production. So instead of reading one and editing one, and if you have more time, you can actually get people to help and say, hey, do you have a minute to design this image for this post? Do you have a minute to, you know, maybe help me edit some of the stuff so I can get other people, which is how like a television show works and how, you know, radio programs work. They're planned out in advance so that they can generate the amount of content.
Yeah. Well, back to my original question. What was the theme of the Shaunakee, I guess, is what I meant. What were you hoping for with the show? Was it just random thoughts from Patrick McLean or what exactly?
No, I wanted to tell stories.
Okay.
And I wanted to...
What kind of stories?
I wanted to work on short stories. it was originally, the target episode was 5 to 7 minutes.
Okay.
It was supposed to be an interesting, quirky little short story, and it kind of was supposed to be a short story that that was a way of getting at something that if you dealt with directly, wouldn't be explained as well. I'll give you an example. The practice of rendition.
Rendition,
which is the United States captures a prisoner and they put him on a plane and they fly him to another country because we can't torture him, but yeah, they can torture him.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
We've gotten that down to a science.
Yeah, something like that. And that was very disturbing to me. The CIA had created this person who owned these planes that were changing FAA numbers. And people had actually tracked the plane, this Gulfstar jet flying in and out of airports. So I looked this up. And the person didn't exist. I don't remember the name of the guy offhand. But I was like, you know, I can't do anything about this. I can't do anything about that. But if you make this guy a fictional person, then I can turn him into a character and make him do whatever I want.
Okay, so it was fictional in this case.
Yeah, fiction.
Yeah.
But it was really fiction that, and I think good fiction
with
does this. Well, not with a message, because there's no message. You can get a handle on something and explore it in fiction where you can't in real life. For example, it's going to be a geeky analogy, but in the 60s, you couldn't really talk about race on TV, but Star Trek could have the episode with the guys who have the black on one side of their face and the white on the other side of, you know.
Sure.
It, you know, the horn growing out of the right side of the head, people
or
hate
the treble with the tribbles.
Or, you know, horn growing out the left side,
yeah,
people's heads. So it's really about racism, but they're aliens, so it's okay, you know.
Sure.
You know, fiction can do those kind of things.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what, and then, so that does get to the question, though, you know, and then it became essays. And the deal was, you know, some essays were sprinkled in there. Mm-hmm. The deal was it was supposed to use audio in an interesting way to tell the story. Because, like, if you're writing for film, you don't have a picture of a building blowing up and someone standing there and saying, "My goodness, that's a large explosion." Yeah. You have the building blowing up and the guy running away, you know, simulating the drama and the forces of adversity coming to get him. You can do the same thing, same kind of thing for audio. And it really is kind of like writing for film, but you don't have to have any money to do it. You can do it for free, basically.
Well, what's great is theater for the mind. It's just like it was, you know, back in the early days of radio. Same concept.
It's the same concept, but and there are some people who do some really cool radio theater stuff now, but what I was after was different because you can do stuff with sound that's a lot more subtle than they could back then. And we also have, you know, films moved at a certain pace and were very dialogue-y, and you can do stuff with that moves at different pace. You know, the pacing of storytelling has changed that way. And what I found was, as I was doing that, is I could tell a much more psychological story that had, even though it had sound, it had some of the visual impact of film. So I was really playing with that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, I guess my next question is, what were you hoping people to get out of the Shanaki? Because whenever I would listen to it and I'd say, these are neat, interesting, unusual, quirky audio segments, you know, and they're slower than the normal fast-paced business type of podcast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously you have a lot of folks out there that wanted to hear something different and refreshing that wasn't time-based, you know. They could listen to it and just get something out of it, you know, whether it was get a laugh out of it or make them think about something or just stop them in their tracks.
A lot of people listen on their commutes, and I have some friends who listen to a lot of other podcasts, but they always like listening to the Shanaki because their expectation is it's going to be good. I don't think they were all uniformly good in the past. You know, you do what you can. It's up to, it's around 90, 85 episodes, somewhere there, and you're going to have ups and downs. But because, you know, it's going to be packaged in a little 5 to 7 minute chunk, which is very digestible. But there were people, I got emails from people overseas who thanked me because it was helping them learn English.
Oh, interesting.
I got emails from a couple of blind people.
Hmm. Stuff you didn't even expect or think about.
And when I put it out there, it wasn't like I was trying to hit any target. It was all about me doing this. I didn't really care whether anybody else liked it.
Well, and it was for personal reasons, personal fulfillment, just like you said, to kind of catharsis, to get something out of yourself. I think that's where a lot of people start. And then, gosh, oh, look at this. People are following me.
It's important I make that point. It seems like it was for catharsis.
Not. Okay, it was not.
Well, it's not, because I don't want to... In some ways, it was cathartic, but I'm actively practicing the craft of telling a story every single time. So that's what I judge on. Not did I, you know, deal with this problem in my personal life. And sometimes somebody was talking to me about the one with the pirate. Did you hear the one with the pirate, the hard drive crash one?
I did not. Not that particular episode.
Man, I was just, I'm trying to get this episode out. I had overworked the hard drive in my laptop recording audio and just, you know, just fried it.
Okay.
And it went down and I was going to miss the week. And I just wrote this thing in a terror, and it was telling the story of my hard drive crashing, but as I'm going through this normal day, this sort of pirate character is, you know, it's this cautionary sea tale where everybody dies at the end, you know, kind of, it's ridiculous. But it really worked as a story, and people really liked it.
One of your better episodes,
Some people really like it. I don't know if that's my favorite episode, but it's pretty fun. Anyway, so the question is, what do I do now, and where do I want it to go? And trying to take this thing that's very organic and maybe trying to put some goals around it or some shapes, you know, some structure.
Yeah, because, you know, you and I were talking last week, as, you know, like you said, we're both on similar journey where we're independent practitioners, freelancers, for another word. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to make some money. So, you know, you make money from copywriting and doing advertising. I make money from helping people with web strategy and putting together websites, public relations. But then you have these other things that are almost hobbies. In the case of the Shaunakee, almost, right? Because up to this point, you really never made money off of it per se, correct?
Well, a lot of money came in donations. So,
well, that helps.
Yeah.
And that's kind of indirect, and that's just waiting for, hoping for the benevolence of the listener. And
when you, well, yeah, this is excellent for us to talk to.
Yeah, so because you get to the point where you're like, okay, I've done 90 episodes. How much time have you put into that? A lot of time, a lot of effort, and you've gotten some great results. You know, you were featured on iTunes. You were, at one point, you were sent out on as one of their top picks, mm-hmm. you know, as a podcast. You were interviewed on WGBH in Boston, the Morning Stories program. Your rating, your star rating in iTunes has consistently been 4.75 stars. You've gotten a couple Parsec awards for your podcast. You've done great, you know, by all those measures. And most podcasters would be ecstatic to get those kind of numbers. And quite frankly, a lot of them probably never get that much acclaim. But then you get to the, you're like, okay, I've gotten the acclaim. Now what?
Well, it's also how do you look at it? So, there is some idea, and it's crept in, that you build an audience for a property and then you sell the property. So there's an element of turning pro here.
And then it's like the old classic, you know, garage band. Oh, you're going pro, you're going to the dark side. Yeah. Some people get skittish about that. You know what I'm saying?
Scott Sigler's a really good example. He's a horror fantasy, like, sort of techno thriller.
Oh, horror.
Horror.
Okay, I thought you said another word.
No, he's not a horror.
Okay.
He Sigler's a stone cold pimp.
Okay.
He ain't no hoe.
Yeah, it's a difference.
He's a pimp.
Because it's hard out there for pimp.
He's a pimp. And he was the first person to podcast a novel. And he has just been, you know, busting his hump, and he's, I don't know, it took a book and a half, I think. When he got a deal with a small press, and when he put his book out on Amazon, he hit number 3.
Wow.
And the only thing ahead of him was 2 Oprah books. Oh. And the whole publishing industry went, holy crap, what just happened?
Sure.
So he's...
that's part of the groundswell. You know, anybody with a computer and an internet connection and a microphone can do that, which is incredible. Not just anybody.
Yeah. So
with a good story.
Yeah.
Good
anybody who's you know, the distribution has gone away. So that here's the part where I'm at with the Shaunakee, and I'm trying to figure out what to do about it. And I'm going to throw some ideas out there. Maybe it's time to attack the whiteboard here.
We're going to show shots of our thoughts and process.
Yeah. If the shots come out okay, otherwise I'm going to turn them into some kind of slides.
Yeah. Signal on slideshare.net or something. But.
Well, we'll just put them on a podcast track, so this is...
Oh, yeah, the enhanced podcast. See, this is great. My first podcast will be an enhanced podcast. How incredible is that?
You are going to be an enhanced podcaster right off the bat. Oh, I probably should have mentioned about the other stuff is that my podcast is usually featured in books on podcasting. So Podcasting for Dummies features the Shaunakee. It's tricks or tips from the podcasting... Masters, the book that Murrah wrote, she used the Shaunakee.
Again, that's great because those books just constantly live on and people are.
It's like I'm some kind of authority.
That's right. People need to respect your authority.
I have to set you up for that. Of course. So the question is, here's what I'm thinking. This is one way I could go. Well, I need to make a connection with people, and if I was doing the Shaunakee, and I was doing it on a street corner, and I had a hat in front of me, everybody who listened, all the people who, you know, download, love the pot, they'd throw change in the hat, and that change in the hat would be enough for me to not worry about that doing this full time. It would also be enough for me to bring some resources to bear and turn this into a bigger production.
You mean other people besides yourself on the show, or
Well, that, or I know a lot of really talented actors, and you know, you can start to go after, instead of, like, a couple of times I've used a few songs on the podcast. Well, I really shouldn't have, but I was pretty sure I'd get away with it.
Yeah.
You can go and license a song. It's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Like This American Life, or, you know, there are four or five people or six people that they have writers that are producing shows for that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar. But there's no reason why the show has to go out on the radio if it has that core of devoted followers. So my question is, how do we provide that mechanism so the money goes in the hat? And how do I provide value? Because some of it is, it's like the Grateful Dead. They made a crap load of money. But when they toured, they consistently had the best sound system.
Yeah, the wall of sound.
Anybody.
Sure.
They spent more training. Money on sure. that show,
yeah.
And they were able to make it. So part of it is, it would make it easier for me to devote more time if I didn't have to. Because it's a little disjointed now, because I'm like, okay, I just got finished doing a tremendous amount of advertising work. But I had zero time to write anything else, because it was, you know, up at 6 and bed at midnight, and every moment was cranking on something.
Yeah.
I was just completely drained at the end of the day.
Well, and you know what? I've also found out when I've done stuff in the past, for example, run a marathon, I didn't have the motivation to train that long by myself and complete that. And when I had a friend challenge me, let's run the thing together, you know, suddenly you got the buddy system. And then all this, you know, what you're talking about is you got somebody else that you're accountable to. That maybe when you don't feel good, they're pushing you, or you're keeping you honest. And you know, likewise, if they're kind of not keeping up, here, hey, we're going to get across the finish line together. But we've got 4 or 5 months of training. So look, this week I don't feel good. I busted my, you know, I pulled a muscle or whatever. Well, your buddy's still going to train. You know, he's going to be able to.
Yeah, he's going to.
And then the next week, all right, come on, get back out, man. You got to get back out here and, you know, make up for lost time, if you will. But, you know, you don't just run out the door and run a marathon, you know. And but what I'm talking, I like where you're talking about, you know, when you get the burden off of just yourself. I mean, that's what we're doing here. When you take the world's burdens on yourself, after a while, it just gets to be problematic. You know, I know I can't create 100% of the content for my website forever, because I'll just get burned out. Or I'll get too busy, or I'll run out of ideas for a week or two and hit the, you know, writer's block that's inevitable for everybody, and think, oh gosh, you know, and then a week turns into 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and you think, oh shoot, well, the thing's, it's old now, gosh, well, maybe I should just abandon it. And that's, I think, what a lot of people do, is that they start out with just, you know, guns a-blazing, ideas, world on fire, and then they do this for a month or two, and then they fizzle out, and they let life get in the way. As opposed to maybe having a structure of friends, family, support, which goes back to the planning, saying, hey, let me bring some other people in and empower them to either kick me in the butt or help me do the content, or mm-hmm. be my, you know, support group.
Yeah, and it always changes when somebody's like, hey, didn't you say you were going to do this thing?
Yeah. I'm sure you had fans go, gosh, where are you?
I've still been getting emails. But so in some ways, this is not a, you know, the tough thing about new media is you can get so excited, in my mind, you can get so excited about the newness of it that you forget that everything actually, you know, it doesn't change anything essential about the human nature. So there's a bunch of people out there who like what I do, and I would like to do it for them. And that's really it. Now the question is, how do we make the mechanics of all these tools and all these technologies and this distribution channel work? You know.
Sure.
So let's talk about that. I just wrote building the We got benevolence of the listener and building the core group up there.
Okay.
I love the phrase benevolence of the listener.
Oh, I know. That's a good use of the phrase.
But how? What are some ways we had talked about? We had talked about the importance of having an email list, and you know, I know from my marketing time, you know, dealing with just you know companies and the importance of having a list.
Yeah,
knowing who people are and having that, and I kind of know some of the people who email me, but I have no idea. So,
That's been an eye-opener for me recently because, again, I've built websites for other people, so I really didn't care who was going to their websites and who their fans were, in other words. These were companies that were doing their own thing.
Clients or customers.
Yeah, we were just doing nice-looking websites and letting them maintain and do their thing. But when, as I started to build my own website and started to research this more extensively, a lot of the big web gurus... That's their number one rule. You could lose everything tomorrow. You could lose your house, your car, your job and stuff, but they would all go down swinging and shooting if you try to take their list. And by that, they mean their list of fans. You know, whatever their list of followers and fans is, they can take that and they can rebuild from scratch. And that was sort of real eye-opening for me, saying, well, what's the magic there? The magic is... if you get that person's permission, kind of back to the Seth Godin world, you know, it's all about the permission. Once you get their permission that they're interested in here's my name, here's my email address. Okay, I'm following you. Now what? You got my attention. That's your group, and your list becomes your gold. And that's what you're building from or off of to basically if you have 20 people following you or 2,000 people or 20,000, you got to treat all those people, you know, like they're the most important thing in the world. Because frankly, they are. The people that just come and listen once or twice and don't sign up for your list, you know, you don't know who they are in the first place.
Yeah, screw them.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. If they come back and they, hey, I like you, is what they're saying. I like you, and if I like you, I might tell my friends I like you.
It's a very hard concept.
It's a strange thing.
It's a very hard concept for a creative person to wrap their head around. Because, you know, I don't know. It seems that sometimes artists and creative types have trouble being liked.
Absolutely,
trouble liking themselves.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've had this web business freedom's been up for a couple weeks, and I've had random people email me. Oh, you know, this blog post is really exactly what I needed today. I was having a down moment, and you've just really helped inspire me. And I'm thinking, who in the hell are you? Yeah. Wow. It's like Raising Arizona. Ma'am, we didn't mean to influence anybody. Yeah. It's like, okay, wow. You know, that's kind of the goal going in. Yes, I think I can change the world and I have something to say, and then you put it up there and you think, do I really have something to say? Does anybody really care? And then if somebody says, yeah, I really do care, you think, oh, okay. Now what?
I had trouble sleeping for a while. And I wrote a post about insomnia, and I put it up. I mean, I didn't even put it up on the Shaggy. You put it up on some, it might have been on some iteration of PatrickEMcLean.com. And I had a couple of people who were like, thank God you wrote this. I've had this problem. I'm going to try that, or that worked, or...
It's freaky.
And you know, one of the things that I think is also good about the Shaggy is that I do, in a small way, a little repackaging content. I've done some episodes where, like, okay, here's this really great idea, and here's where I found it in this book, and I wanted to talk about it. Like the St. Patrick's Day one was this really great idea of in the book How the Irish Saved Civilization.
Okay.
Because the Irish were a little crazy.
Sure.
And then they saved all these books that civilization kind of went on. But a lot of people just find something else out there and repost it.
Yeah,
they don't even redigest it. They don't even put it in a way that makes it easier for people to understand. And you're clearly taking all the stuff that's gone into your head and you're making sense of it.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to do that I didn't want to just repackage other people's stuff. Because I think now a real differentiator is originality. Which wow, what a concept, huh? I mean, yeah. You know, and that, but that's what you were doing too. And so I think that's where, in the case of Shaunakee, you know, the people that choose to follow you find you and think, man, this guy's original and fresh and strange. I just want to see where it's going to go. And that's what's cool, because, you know, you could turn around and say, hey, I've got a line of t-shirts that's, you know, weird t-shirts or something, for example. And people would say, oh, yeah, this cool guy, this Shaunakee guy that I follow, he's got t-shirts. I'm going to buy one.
Yeah, t-shirts. I mean, it's strange. T-shirts might not be the thing, but I...
Correct. But, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you could decide, hey, I think this is what, you know, is the new hot thing. And then you're basically a, you know, you're a thought leader in that sense. Or you are a, you're a, what do you call it? A circus master. You're circus. The guy like Pied Piper.
Freak.
You're the guy, you know, and people...
1 foot on the zebra with the thing, baton, twirling, falling off the trapeze.
Fire breathing. And, yeah, I mean, people need something to cut through all the clutter, and they look for, like, the, here's the guy. Here's a guy who's going to give you something to think about.
The realization, the realization that I'm coming to is I thought for a long time, and a lot of people think this way, that success would be publishing, would be getting published. And I don't think that's the case, even though they're, you know, we're talking about doing the next iteration of this. I'm enjoying a level of success as a writer and a creative person, the relationship I have with those, that core group, that some writers never have. That when Mickey Spillane died, I put a little brief obituary because I had come across a thing, and, you know, he just, you know, wrote this really raw, rugged, hammering someone flat into the concrete, you know, kind of rough, tough guy. You know, stuff, but he said, I don't have readers. I have customers, and a customer is your friend. It was something like that. So, like, to take an extreme case, you've got Stephen King, who's been working on what he's been doing for a long, long time.
Awesome.
He doesn't need a publisher.
No.
He doesn't need anyone he has a relationship with a great number of people who want his stuff.
Yes, and
that's the thing.
Yeah, and he's at the point where he can do cool stuff like serialize a novel online or put it out in some strange fashion. But I think you've hit on a great point because, you know, I've felt this way too. A lot of creative people feel this way. Like you said, I have to put out the great American novel before I die, or else, you know, what's it all been for?
Well, clearly I have to put out the great American novel before I die. Don't take that away from me.
Oh, all right. Well, so you're not discounting
that. Or what's it been for, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, but what you said was, I got to publish. Well, you know, it's so much easier to publish now because you can self-publish. But, going off the long tail theory, I think the average self-published person, they don't sell more than a handful of copies, you know. So they end up with the trunk full of books or whatever. But it's more of the self-congratulation, the self-fulfillment that comes out of that.
Well, most of the people who write books write horrible books. For one reason or another. Or most of the people who self-publish books. But it's the difficulty for me has been really letting go of my ego and coming to the point, like, to have this conversation. Because, look... you can build a really good case that I am an expert at podcasting, and I know the way this should be done.
Yes, I would say that. And then you turn around and say, no, I'm not really an expert.
And you could build a case, and if I think of myself as a really great writer, I would not have learned all the crap that I learned about writing a novel by doing it. I would have been close to it, I would have cranked it out a lot faster, and it would have sucked. It's like that Monty Python, you know, they said it was daft to build a castle in a swamp. But I built a castle, and it sank. And then I built a second castle, and that one fell over and sank. And the third castle! And that's what the novel's been like. I wrote it, not, you know, wrote 80,000 words, wrote 100,000 words, whatever, and re-outlined it, started again, realized that wasn't working, re-outlined it, started again. Finally, I'm like, okay, now I got it figured out. There's the planning thing. But
most people have no idea that when they read a finished piece that much work went into it. But I mean, you mentioned Stephen King, and he's like that. You know, he works on these drafts. He sets them aside for 6 to 12 weeks or whatever. I mean, he says that on writing. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, boy, the guy's a genius. He pumps this stuff out, he hands it to his editor, and he moves on to the next thing.
The coolest thing
he goes back and he like reworks stuff.
The coolest thing about that book is he showed the first draft. And one thing that I was thinking about doing, since I'm doing some of the stuff on Google Docs, is you can go back through all the revisions and you can just see how many, you know, where it started and how it changed, and basically how you just hack all the crap out of it. But he did that in the book. He showed the first draft of something, he showed the proofreading marks. And I have total respect for that.
Yeah, you know, and you look at that and you go, wow, this is pretty utilitarian. You know, I went into stuff in journalism school. Wow, Stephen King does the same thing. Yeah. And it's just, he's a worker.
Yeah.
The guy has a work ethic. And that's a lot of the stuff we're talking about.
Everything's just work.
It takes work. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fall off the tree. And even these mommy bloggers and stuff that are out there, you know, it takes them putting the kids somewhere and sitting down and creating content regularly and building the fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess the thing is, how do I make this more of a neighborhood thing? So here's the economics, the way I look at it. Finance is actually probably the right word. If I get $1 a month from everyone who listens, that would be plenty.
Yeah.
And for them, it's nothing.
Okay, everyone, send $1 to Patrick.
That may very well be part of it, because I always want to produce free content. Maybe all the content isn't free. So, but how do we build that? It's like that. If I was working as a barista at Starbucks, and every time somebody came in, I told them a funny little story, they would throw more change in the change cup. It's the change from the dollar. That's the amount of money we're talking about on an individual transaction basis.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're not looking for a lot of money. You're not looking for people to pay $100 for something. You're talking about just the incremental.
The incremental stuff.
Yeah.
Because then if I can get some kind of incremental revenue stream, then I can just focus on this. Because my problem is I can't focus my attention right now.
Sure.
You see?
Oh, yeah. It's a great, challenging question. I don't know if we'll solve it right this minute, but
here,
this is part one of a series.
Well,
what we're talking about here, because there's a lot to consider.
There's a lot to consider, and let me just I want to get you writing on this whiteboard, because it's just my handwriting. It's weird. It's like I made up your voice or did an imitation or something. So here's one of the things I was thinking of. I put the Shaunaki, relaunch it, really get it going as good as I can, and use every option. You know, everything that I can do to streamline the process, to make sure everything's great, to really crank out some stuff, make it good. Call in favors for 6 months. And in that 6 months, I need to hit, let's say a dollar a listener. Could be $1 an episode. That seems to be a bit much. But if it's $1 a listener a month, you know, how much difference is there between $1 and $2? For the listener, not much, but it's doubling doubling the revenue stream. So that's the question. So you got $1 a listener. And then I thought that one thing to do would be to have a little meter on the website, which would be percent free riders.
Okay.
You know, so this month, you know, we've got, 65% free riders. Which is the things downloaded, but, you know, only so many people,
sure,
you know, chipped in. So that's one way to do it. I'm going to take a little picture of my horrible drawing.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to be able to read that. It says 65% free riders.
Well, I can always turn it into some kind of graphic, and but if we keep track of it with the podcast. So this is sort of... Let's call this option one. I am a messy whiteboard guy, let me tell you. Option two is embargo content. So, uh, I'm just going to be able to read embargo. So what you do is you produce. So I produce a piece, broadcast it, and then hold it hostage until a threshold is met.
You mean across the base of listeners? Hey, until we hit X amount of money, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not putting the next one out. So you're basically doing like a serialized story or something.
Yeah.
And then you get into that climax, and people are like, I want to know what happens.
Yes.
Like the Stephen King. I got to see whether she's going to break his legs in the bed or not. What's going to happen?
And yes.
Then, or, hey, everybody pony up, and then if we hit $500 or whatever at least, then I'll do the next episode. Until then, no dice.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be fun.
Well, my problem is that, and I'm going to write this right next to the word, it's kind of a prick thing to do.
Well, you could say that, but it's also just, it's kind of fun, and it's the scarcity principle. Hey, you know, this stuff's scarce. Now, a lot of these web gurus do that stuff. You know, act now, you know, I'm taking this down tomorrow. No, why would they need to take it down tomorrow? There's no reason to.
Yeah.
But they just do it just to make people think, oh, I got to jump on this.
And I want to be really careful about that, because that damages the relationship with the listeners.
Especially
relationship with the follower. And with the web girls, you know, web business, you know, kind of guys, that might be a different thing. Like for Seth Godin, but I don't want to have that kind of relationship.
Well, the other thing you might...
I don't have.
Sure, you risk is you've been doing this for a long time. It's everybody's... It's free. People want it for free. And all of a sudden, you're going to try to charge for it. You might have a bunch of people just bail out. Yeah.
I think the way to do it is to do it by some kind of premium content model. And everybody who listens, you know, most everybody who listens is
yeah,
an adult, and sure, they realize that time is scarce. I mean, that's really what we're, and that one of the reasons that we're having this conversation, I'm going to podcast it, is that they're going to get involved in this. They're just not in the room yet. You know, I'm going to get a lot of feedback from them. So here's I'm going to put 2B up here.
Is the
premium?
Absolutely, that works well.
But here, let me tell you what 2B is.
Oh, there it is for the pen.
Yep. So what I do is let's say you take How to Succeed in Evil, which was 10 episodes. So I really had that story going, and I think I might do this with 5 episode chunks. So you do that story, and you tell us if there's a complete story arc there. There's a complete and satisfying story, but you're left with that feeling that wouldn't it be great if this kept going on? Mm-hmm. So then, after you've told a complete story and you haven't jerked somebody around, then the sequel is something you charge for. And that seems a little bit more
palatable.
Yeah.
Customer friendly.
Now
non-prickish.
Yes, now with 75% less pricklitude.
Yeah.
I interrupted you. Talk to me about the premium content model you were talking about.
Well, I'm a big fan of that. For example, there's a guy, Don McAllister, who's in, I believe, Scotland. And he's Screencast Online. You know him?
I haven't seen him.
He's utilitarian. I mean, he's a Mac guy, and he puts out these screencasts.
Oh, you showed me this guy how to use, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he puts out content about how to use different programs, you know, on the Mac. And he does them in screencast format, but he will put out low res versions and partial shows, you know, enough to whet your appetite. Like for the average person watching this on iTunes or whatever that you want to download, you'll get the first 20 minutes. If you're a premium subscriber, you're going to get an extra 10 or 20 minutes where he delves more into the mechanics of whatever software he's looking at, gives you more. You can also then download high def versions if you want to, and he will also give the premium listeners the opportunity to buy DVDs, for example, packaging all of his episodes, which is highly helpful because these things are big files. So at the end of the year, for X amount of money, you know, and not a lot really in Don's case, you can buy a DVD of all the year's episodes and keep that on the shelf. Great. And then you can, you know, clean off your hard drive and you don't have to store all this stuff. So one idea for you might be seasonal compilations or best of or packages of stuff. So if somebody's doing a long drive in the car or whatever, you know, they can get it. You could send it to them on a jump drive, maybe, or it would be fun too to have packages of stuff, gift packages. You know, the Shawnee
yeah.
swag. Yeah. And you know, you get the coffee mug and you get the jump drive in there, or you get a T-shirt. You know, and it's like a little fan club kind of deal.
Yeah, the packages are good.
I mean, because you're talking about the ability to go and get on one of these sites and make stuff with your.
Yeah, I know. This is the other source of what do I make that people are going to want to buy?
Yeah, and you look at
instead of hey, you know, there's a site that makes T-shirts. It's okay. What do I make that people would value? And absolutely, I should have compilation CDs. This is part of the not, you know, going pro and not having a plan. I should have compilation CDs. But there should be a book. There should be a book of the best Shawnee episodes and maybe part of the stories of how they were made.
That, yeah, sort of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And that's a great idea because you can, there are, of course, really cheap transcription services even that can, you know, for not a whole lot of money at all.
Cheap transcription? Because I looked at transcription and, well, I have them all written down.
So you just did them all before you recorded them kind of thing? Or
yeah, wrote it and then read
see,
it.
See, that's a great idea. Yeah, put them in book format. Because, again, a lot of these web gurus, they record all this content. They just pay somebody to transcribe it, they stick in a book format, and it's the thud factor. You're like, wow, I got a book, you know? I got a book with this DVD. And then you read it, and you go, ah, it's just a transcription. You know, now the key is you want to clean it up, because half these guys don't even clean it up, and so it's just a terrible, crappy, raw transcription.
Yeah, see, that's the prick factor.
Yeah, it is a prick factor.
You just,
and you're like, damn it,
switch. You're like, hey!
I thought this was a different book, but it's really just, you just paid some person in, you know, overseas somewhere $2 an hour to transcribe this stuff. That sucks, you know. But it makes the package look good when it comes in the mail. You know, you open it up, shiny, wow, look at this. You open it up, ooh, here's a DVD. Ooh, I got a book with this. But in your case, you know, if you had the companion book, like the Prairie Home Companion, but, I mean, this, yeah, it's kind of the feel I get with that. I mean, they're doing radio with mine. That's really, and it's,
well, you know how that show started?
No, I do not.
He started doing a show in a small theater with some of his friends, and it grew from there.
And that's kind of, well, you know, I should have asked you.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, I should have asked you, what does a Shawnee mean? Because don't you have a beer mug or something on there? Is it something Shawnee's, related to alcohol?
No, it's not related to alcohol. That's just kind of a joke.
Okay. Because it is Irish. I figured there had to be alcohol connection.
Exactly. That's the joke.
Oh, it's a storyteller, right?
I mean, storyteller, yeah.
But it's Gaelic?
Yeah, special. It's kind of a special kind of storyteller. It's somebody who goes from town to town telling stories, basically. And at some period, and I don't, you know, I kind of made it sound really good, at some period during the history when the language, the Gaelic language was being oppressed, was being, you know, basically stamped flat by the English, they would go around from town to town and they would tell stories in the pubs to the adults, and then they would take the kids out and they would teach them the language during the day in what were called bush schools. So I don't have the full story of that, but that's what a couple of my Irish friends have told me. So the next time I go over there, I need to really investigate that.
Well, everybody who listens, you know, they're on sort of an inside, like, I know the Shawnee. I know who the Shawnee is.
It really is. It really is, you know, as I think about it, it really is very similar to that model. It's artisan storytelling.
Yeah.
It's like that, you can buy bread anywhere, but this should be high quality bread. The other thing it bumps over into is, it's kind of like an audiobook, but most audiobooks frown on using any kind of sound effects.
Yeah, and I thought that was fun in your, with the Shawnee.
Well, I use them differently.
Yeah, and it's not like,
I use the medium for all, I'm trying to use the medium for all it can do.
Yeah, but it isn't like harkening back to the 40s and 50s radio shows with all the, you know, clamor and pots and pans and stuff. It was, like you said, more subtle. Which is kind of...
Yeah.
But it makes it refreshing, because most of the podcasts are just like the ones we're doing now. They don't, you know, just a couple people talking, or one person talking.
Yeah, it's two guys talking.
And it's like, okay, great. That's, you're getting, leather. You're there for the content, but, you know, you're missing an opportunity, because when people are hearing something like that, they're riding down the train or whatever, you're in their head. And that's what makes podcasts so great in the first place.
Yeah. And Stephen King wrote about that in On Writing. He said that I believe that writing is telepathy. because you get directly into someone's head.
Sure, and he hit the nail on the head with that. Because that guy, you know, he's spooky like that. He'll totally get to you.
He also said the best thing in there was, he said, you know, some people have criticized him for writing, you know, stories about, you know, horrifying stories, terrible stories, these things, you know, working class people. He said, look, this is what I got. This is what I have. This is what I have to give.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he didn't try to be Jane Austen or something, you know? I mean,
well, I don't think you can. Jane Austen didn't try to be, you know,
whatever.
Flaubert. I don't mess up my literary.
But you're right. Why are most of his stories based in Maine? Because the guy grew up in Maine. You know, he worked at laundromats with weird people.
Yeah, he worked strange night shift jobs and wrote an entire book of stories about.
Yeah. He knows the common working man. And even though he's not necessarily a common working man now, he still has that root character in him.
I think it's great.
That's the thing about being a writer. You got to be authentic at some point. You just can't try to be somebody else. You just have to be who you are. That's why I'm a cliche guy. Yeah. We clash about that. You're like, I can't stand the damn pun headlines. I don't mean cliches. I like puns. You don't like puns, but
puns and headlines.
But every time I write a pun, I think of you, and I go, Patrick wouldn't approve.
For all of you out there who, for one reason or another, who aspire to go into advertising, and if you want to do that, don't use puns.
Don't use puns, kids.
First, don't go into advertising. Second, don't use puns.
Right. Do not go into advertising, and don't do puns. Uh-huh. That should be like, don't do drugs. Don't do puns.
Don't do puns.
Yeah.
You know, puns. Only Shakespeare can get away with puns.
And he did, yeah. And it's already been done. Puns have been done.
Yeah. Puns are checked out. Maybe a couple hundred years in the future, puns will be good again. Puns are actually really great in other languages. In Japanese, because they have the same basic sounds, you know, the same basic, like the... that go into a word, so there are a lot of words that are either pronounced slightly differently or have the same like three syllables, that you can make such a run of very intelligent puns in that language that it actually is considered to be very, very witty in that culture. It's kind of like rhyming in English kind of sucks because there's kind of only one kind of rhyme, and since it's not an inflected language, you know, like if you rhyme in Italian, you've got a whole bunch more options and a whole bunch more ways you can change the sentence structure and everything, you know, because it's the ending of the word that changes what it does. And like Latin is even more ridiculous because everything has a different ending on the word. So at least that's the way it was explained to me, and it made sense.
Sure. So where do we go from here? What's next?
I don't know. We're about an hour.
I think we got a lot of good stuff on the board and talked about, and should probably digest it a little bit and come back and
let's finish up talking about email newsletters, because I know nothing about email newsletters.
Okay, so here's the theory behind e-newsletters. You know, a lot of people poo-poo them because, okay, well, there's so much more cool stuff now, RSS feeds and all that, but everybody checks email. You know, your grandma has email, so everybody still checks email, and it goes back to that permission-based list. Okay, if somebody tells you they want to get on your list, awesome, and then you've got them and you can blast some stuff. It has to be meaningful content, of course, or else people just aren't going to open it. I'm guilty of that too. I subscribe to a bunch of e-newsletters, but probably 3/4 of them I just kind of glance at the subject line. I don't have time. I'd love to look at this, but I'm just too busy. And so you just click the box and you hit delete.
Alpaca farming. I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it this year. Maybe next year, alpaca farming.
Yeah. Now, one thing I've learned recently is more of the secret of, again, for the web gurus out there, is they set up autoresponders. So when somebody signs up for their list the first time, they get a predefined series of emails coming at them, you know, over the next course of weeks or months. And that's a great way to do it, because especially as a content generator, you can write a bunch of this stuff, you can come up with a theme or serialize or however you want to do it. And then that's an easy way to keep people interested from the email perspective. Another way that people use their email list, of course, is when they do post something, the podcast or whatever, they put the transcription or they put an excerpt, they blast it out to their list, and they say, here's a you know, copy blogger is a good one. We talked about just doing that recently. So if you don't happen to go to the podcast or their blog that particular day, you might see it. Oh, okay, they sent me an email. And for the ones that people like you and I follow that you're really into, yeah, you're going to open it and look at it and see what they have to say, especially if you have some regular segments in your email newsletter that people are kind of looking for, stuff that you think is cool, you're sort of filtering through. And I don't even think anymore it has to be rich HTML, pretty emails either. A lot of these web guru types that I get, it's just pure text, old school, but it's just, man, it's hard hitting. It's good information.
To figure out if I can have some kind of other story going in email.
Well, yeah, and for you, it's strange because you're doing an audio podcast. That's the primary vehicle, and then you're turning it in on its head. Oh, I got to have a print component to it, potentially. Well,
it's all words, and I can put them together in an interesting order.
Well, sure. At root, of course, you do that for a living. You write. You put stuff on paper still.
Yeah.
Right?
There's
still
paper. Paper's my favorite tool. But anyway, well, I appreciate you taking the time on this kind of chilly Friday morning in Charlotte.
Yeah, this has been a blast. And like I said, the first one for me, and what an honor to be doing it on the Shawnakee, of all places.
God, it's going out on your feed, too.
Yeah.
So,
this is a shared deal. And all the Shawnakee listeners are going, what the heck kind of episode is this? But it's really kind of more peek behind the scenes of where you are, where you're trying to go, what you're thinking about.
Well, there's a lot of pieces here that no one's really figured out how to put together correctly because it's so new. I mean that change in a hat analogy. When I explained, I was at a podcasting conference at Duke, and I came up with that when everybody was talking about, well, big corporate interests are going to come in and just ruin podcasting. And my question was, how? I'm on an equal footing, at least in terms of distribution. I'm on an equal footing with ABC right now.
Sure. Well,
World News Tonight podcast and my podcast is exactly. It's the exact same amount of difficulty to get.
Correct. Which is why the playing field is so level. I guess what scares people is when an authentic, fun show like yours comes along, you start to get some traction, and then somebody's going to come along and buy you, and then all of a sudden it's the Shawnakee from Disney, you know, or whatever. They're going to go, oh, man, what happened? You know, you sold out, and then your message is going to get filtered or whatever. Maybe that's the fear.
Yeah, but the reason that happened in the past, or like you take the band and you put them on a big record label, is you need a distribution.
Yeah, you need the distribution. And also, guess what? The band members got to eat. You know, so, they get tired of living out of the back of their car.
Yeah, but this is different than the distribution problem. This is the exact thing. I'm glad we kept talking, because this is...
Yeah, but you never shut the microphone off. You just keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Especially, you know, I have a bad phone call with a client. Just leave the microphone running. This is the thing. People need to get paid to do things, especially if they're going to do them full time. If you cut out all that distribution and the middleman stuff, you can pay much less for it, and much more of the money can go to the original content creator. The reason people are still going through traditional distribution is they're the people who know how to extract money.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is as it goes through that traditional distribution chain, it gets friggin' homogenized.
Yeah.
Like, and so your DJ friend, Disney.
Yeah, and he works for a station that's one of these new music stations, and the new music is so bad.
It's so old.
And even, you know, yes, yeah, it's pathetic, and it's not real cutting edge, and it's not new music, and it's not refreshing at all. It's just the playlist that, you know, the big corporation decides is what they're going to call hot.
Yeah, and it's just, I think people are just flat out sick of it. But, like, the Disney filter is...
And I didn't mean to pick on Disney.
No, just pick on Disney, man. Anybody who takes the Hunchback of Notre Dame and turns it into a funny little story about this guy who gets love. And it's just a soul-wrenching story. Which I'm pretty sure in the original that the Hunchback dies at the end, if I remember correctly.
Maybe.
There's no happy little singing with birds and, you know, it's brutal, unrequited love. You know, Romeo and Juliet, where they live happily ever after.
They die.
What? Yeah, they should die.
They actually died in the sepulcher or whatever, right? Is that what they call
it? Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just, a terrible, stupid, it's a terrible, stupid twist, too, because, you know, Juliet fakes her death. Romeo thinks she's really dead, so he commits suicide. Juliet wakes up, sees he's dead, so she commits suicide.
Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just, okay. Not only is it sad, but, you know, Shakespeare's kind of saying that, or that story kind of says that we're just idiots. Especially when it comes to love.
And plus, he probably wanted to just watch the faces of people leaving the theater going, damn, I thought that was a love story. That was a horror show.
No, but it is a great love story because it takes you through all those. You definitely know that they absolutely love one another because they can't live without one another. So that you have that catharsis. But that's a whole other.
Yeah, so, but see if they had a prenup, maybe one of them would have stuck around. See what they
a prenup. Romeo and Juliet prenups.
No prenups.
Postnups.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this has been fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Definitely.
And we'll come back and we'll talk to listeners in a couple weeks or something and let them know where you are and where I am. And
yeah, and we should.
I think you should
spend some time working on your story and how you get it out too.
Totally, and I think you should leave your listeners with a challenge, and maybe me too. Is this is about community? Leave comments if you have ideas for either one of us. How can we make money with our content? Then tell us.
Yeah, how does this work? How do you want?
How can we make money in a fair way that's not cheesy and is not, you know, holding people hostage? You know, you like our content. If you like our content, what are you on to spend on?
Low prickliosity coefficient.
Low prickliosity.
Yeah, no, and that's what it is. It's like, you know what? On some level, you can get really, you know, heady about what you do or whatever, but I'm kind of a little jester. I'm making funny, interesting things for people. What kind of funny, interesting things do you want me to make?
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to say that right at the end. You're like the court jester. But, you know, the court jester gets paid. Yeah, the minstrel. Hey, but the king pays for the court jester.
Yeah, or you know, occasionally chops his head off.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But the king does pay for the court
There's
jester.
A risk involved. Especially when you start making fun of the king.
Well, yeah.
Until next time.
Until next time. All right.
I'm Patrick McLean.
He's not. He's an imposter. All right, I'm turning this off now.
All right.